Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 6, Text 4. Prak kalpa vishayam etam smritim te muni satama na hi esha vyavadat kala esha sarvanik nirakriti. Prakalpa vishayan etam. Prakalpa vishayam etam. Smritam te muni sattama. Smritam te muni sattama. Nahi esha vyadat kala. Nahi esha vyadat kala. Esha sarva nirakriti. Esha sarva nirakriti. Pratkalpa vishayam etam. Smritam te muni sattama. Nahi esha vyadat kala. Esha sarva nirakriti. Others, please. Vaishnavis. Okay. Prior. Kalpa, the duration of Brahma's day. Vishayam, subject matter. Etam, all these. Smritim, remembrance. Te, your. Munisatama, O great sage. Na, not. He, certainly. Esha, all these. Vyadat, made any difference. Kala, course of time. Esha, all these. Sarva, all. Nirakriti, annihilation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O great sage, this is, by the way, this is Vyasadeva speaking. O great sage, time annihilates everything in due course. So how is it that this subject matter, which happened prior to this day of Brahma, is still fresh in your memory, undisturbed by time? Purport. A spirit is not annihilated even after the annihilation of the material body. So also, spiritual consciousness is not annihilated. Sri Narada developed this spiritual consciousness even when he had his material body in the previous kalpa. Consciousness of the material body means spiritual consciousness expressed through the medium of a material body. This consciousness is inferior, destructible, and perverted. But superconsciousness of the supra-mind in the spiritual plane is as good as the spirit soul and is never annihilated. Om Aginata Madam Dasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurta Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamutam. So last night, I drove Ananda Kirtan and Bhakta Davis to the airport so they could catch their flight. They're going to India for the Mayapur Vrindavan pilgrimage. And as we were driving into the airport, we were actually in the airport, and we were just kind of on the top level, the departures level, driving towards Terminal 1. There's a big billboard, and the big billboard said, "We are working 24/7 so that you will have..." I said, "We are working 24/7 so that you will have a world-class LAX experience." That's the, and the billboard, the picture on that was the words, and the picture was they had a, one of the check-in agents. They had the guys who, take the bags, and they had, like one of everybody. The guys who work on the airplanes, the guys who are working there on construction, the ladies who are, on the plane taking it. They had, one of each type of personality that comprises the LAX experience, and they were all there, kind of looking. So as I drove in further, then they have the announcements, and the announcements were going blah 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 blah, and we hope you have a outstanding LAX experience. So it didn't occur to me right then, but then later on, as I was chanting this morning, I said, so they got it. They've understood something. The thing is the experience. They got that right. They got that understanding. What we're after, what people are after, is an experience. Just like there's that expression, money can't buy happiness. Well, what's that saying? It's saying that more important than the money is happiness. Happiness is more important than the money. Money is a means to an end. Happiness is like an end. You see? So people have understood that. They're not that dumb. Far from it. They've understood that the really important thing, what we're really after, is an experience, a positive experience. That's the bottom line. That's what people really want. That's why they're working so hard, to make money, to get a partner they want, or the things they want, the house they want, the car they want, the clothes. Everything. It's all a means to that end. That end is they want to have that good experience. Okay? So the thing is this, that that experience, and it's pointed out, it's touched upon in this purport, that experience, they won't have it. The experience they're looking for, they won't find it where they're looking for it. See? Because as it's pointed out here, as it says here, material consciousness is inferior, destructible, and perverted. See, they're looking for the experience. They're looking, actually, I'll just back up a teeny bit. They're looking for the experience of the soul, you know, of the pure soul. It's said in the Vedanta Sutra, Anandamayo Biasat. The soul is always hankering after pleasure. Anandamayo Biasat. And also elsewhere it's said that the nature of the soul is that it's Sat Chit Ananda. It's eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. The opposite of inferior, destructive, and perverted. So the experience that they're looking for can only be found when they revive their awareness of their original nature, which is completely spiritual. It's not going to be found at LAX. It's not found in anything material, you see? In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, I think, I can't remember, it's text 1920 or something like that. There's, I'm not going to, can't quote the whole verse, but there's Buddhi, how's it go? Ajantikam yatad Buddhi graya matindriya. There's a phrase there where Prabhupada, and he used to quote it a lot, it explains that real happiness is experienced with transcendental senses. You have to go beyond the material senses, and you have to awaken the spiritual senses, awaken the spiritual consciousness, and that's where the real happiness is. See, it won't be found in matter. So many, the examples are there. Just like Papa would give that example of the animals running out into the desert after the mirage. You know, the water's not found out there. There's, you know, the punas charvita charvananam, the chewing, the chewed, you know, the animal also, the guys, they take the sugar cane and they put it through the machine, you know, make sugar cane juice for the people, and they throw the sugar cane off, and then the animals come and they suck on that. There's no juice left. It's chewing the chewed. See, in other words, they have a flawed process. They're looking for happiness where it isn't. Actually, the analogy I like the most, or the metaphor example I like the most, I don't know, I never heard Prabhupada say, but I've heard devotees get used in classes, the musk deer. The musk deer has, I think maybe even it's the Bhagavatam, I'm not sure. It has a scent of musk that it really, it's attracted to like anything. And it's, where is that scent coming from? It's going all around trying to find that musk scent, but it's coming from its belly button. You know, it's right there in itself. So in the same way, people are looking all over for this experience, you know, but the experience is right there. It's right within, actually. The experience is to be found, is to be experienced when they reawaken their Krishna consciousness. And even, you know, people know this. Even they have an intellectual understanding of that. That's the case, or at least they have an intellectual understanding of that. The happiness is not can be found in anything in the material world. I mean, I remember before I was a devotee, I was attending a lecture at a yoga center in Midtown Manhattan. And the person who was giving the talk, he was saying that sense gratification is immediately, how do you put it, immediately stimulating, but ultimately debilitating. You see? So that, you know, he had that understanding. Now, that person went on to become a devotee of Krishna. That's Amala Bhakta Swami. I remember those words stuck in my mind. You know, that was before either one of us had come to Krishna consciousness. He was Shiva Prem at that time, and later to become Swami Shivananda, later to become Amala Bhakta Swami. So, you know, sometimes people have that understanding. They know. But rarely are they fortunate to, you know, put the dots together and come to the point of understanding that they know where the happiness isn't. A lot of them don't. A lot of them are just karmis. Karmis, they don't know where the happiness isn't, and they're chasing after it in the material world. But then, you know, a step above that is the gyanis who understand that, hey, wait a second. This doesn't work. I mean, this is a flawed process. I'm not going to find happiness in this material sense gratification. So, you know, they're a step above. But Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavanam Papajate. Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavanam Papajate. Vasudeva Sivamiti Samahatma Sudulabha. Krishna says, after many births and deaths, one who is actually in knowledge, one who is actually a jnani, who's actually understood the difference between matter and spirit, surrenders unto me and engages in devotional service. Such a great soul is very, very rare. But rarely does somebody, as I said, connect the dots and come to the understanding that of where the happiness is. It's in this. It's in devotional. It's in this process, Krishna consciousness. People are looking for the LA experience. The LA experience is not at LAX. the LA Experience is at LALive.us, right? That's where the LA Experience is. If they want that experience, they got to stop going to LAX. You're not going to experience anything there except for Punas Charvita Charvananam, where they've already experienced the chewing the chew. They got to go on and LAX, you know, LALive.us and tune into this. This is where they'll find the experience, right? And so that's, you know, and no place else. No place else. This is it. You know, Hadayanama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Katiranta. This, in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is this, the chanting of the holy name, or the, you know, the Krishna consciousness movement, the process of devotional service. This is where that experience is. Also, it's nicely explained by Rupa Goswami. He kind of breaks it down and gives a step-by-step explanation of how it comes about. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's that verse, Adoshvara Tato Sadhu Sangha Tata Bhajana Kriya. So it starts off with Adoshvara. You have some faith. Even if it's provisional faith. Provisional faith is different from implicit faith. Implicit faith means no doubt. You have implicit faith. There's no doubt. You're 100% convinced about something. Provisional faith is you're just thinking, benefit of the doubt. You know, let me give this the benefit of the doubt. This seems like it's got some good stuff about it, and it makes some sense, and it seems like it's working for some of these people. So provisional faith. Let me just give it a try. So Adoshrana, you have to have at least initially provisional faith, benefit of the doubt. And Adoshrana, Tato Sadhu Sangha, and you associate with the devotees, and then hopefully that will increase that faith. Tato Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. Then you engage in the process of devotional service. And Bhajana Kriya. And then Anartha Nivritti, you become free from your bad habits. Anartha Nivritti. Nishta. You become fixed in devotional service, and then Ruchi, etc. On and on, on and on to Prema, like that. So that's where the experience is. The experience is in practicing, executing this process of devotional service as given to us by Srila Prabhupada and the predecessor Acharyas, back, all the way back to Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, Lord Brahma, like that. That's where that experience is that everybody's looking for, that ananda. You know, it's in engaging in the process of devotional service. Now, somebody might say, you might be listening and to this and hear me say this, and you might be thinking, well, you know, wait, I've been practicing this. I've been doing this Bhajana Kriya now for, you know, 5 months or 5 years or 10, 20, 30, 40. Yeah, what to speak of experiencing bhava and prema, I'm still struggling in anartha nivritti. I mean, I'm not so sure. I don't know if it works. Well, my response to that is relax, take a deep breath, let it in, let it out. Okay. You got to try harder. The process works. The process works. If you're not having that experience, just go back to basics. You know, think about, be more careful, be more serious. Krishna will give you the intelligence. Try to understand, what am I doing wrong? Or what am I not doing right enough? You see? Because this is it. There's nothing, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam. There's no other process. What Prabhupada gave us, this is the process. This is the way to get from Shraddha to Prem. Nothing else. So if we're, and I'm including myself in here, in this group here. So if we're not experiencing, you know, what we want to be experiencing, don't think the fault the process, don't fault the philosophy. Just hold up the mirror and you'll see where the problem is. The problem is with us, our execution. You got to be more careful. You know, like I'll give you an example. Okay, I'm not trying to, like, is that purport? I've mentioned it in classes before where Prabhupada goes. He's talking about Haridas Thakur and how he's, you know, was chanting 300,000 names daily and like that. And Papa says, so that's from Mukta Purush. We can't imitate Haridas Thakur. But then he says, but we can follow his example by chanting 16 rounds and worshiping the Tulsi plant. And Prabhupada says, so this process has such great spiritual potency, and simply by doing this, one can become spiritually strong. So therefore, we recommend the members of the Krishna conscious movement to follow Haridas Thakur's example rigidly. Chanting 16 rounds does not take much time, nor is offering respect to the Tulsi plant difficult. The process has immense spiritual potency. That one should not miss this opportunity. You see? So when you hear something like that from the Nichisiddha Shaktivesh avatar, spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, you know, you got to really take it seriously. I mean, you got to, why, if we're not doing that, why, if you're not doing that, you got to ask yourself, hey, why aren't I doing that? I mean, here's Prabhupada saying that just by simply by doing this, one can become spiritually strong. I mean, it's just one example. It's something I've happened to zero in on, but there's so many. You could use other things to make the same example. Why am I doing that? Why aren't I doing that? You know, Prabhupada's saying that just simply by doing this, I'm going to become spiritually strong. He's saying that the process has immense spiritual potency. One should not miss this opportunity. Then, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, wait a second, why aren't I doing that? If you're not doing that, see? So then there's, we have to, I think we have to approach devotional service like that. Because we have a tendency to glaze, you know, we have a tendency to go, Prabhupada said that, but yeah, I know that, yeah, but anyway, you know. No, it's like, you know, the other morning somebody said something in toto. In other words, it's literal. When Prabhupada says something like that, it means you got to do exactly that. When Prabhupada says, be here for Mangalarti, we have to, you know, when Prabhupada says, you know, distribute the, all the instructions are meant to be taken very literally and precisely. And then I think when we engage in devotional service like that, you know, doing to like the letter of the law and the spirit of the law simultaneously both, then we'll have a better chance of getting that taste that we're always hankering for, you know, the higher taste. We'll make progress through those different stages towards prema bhakti, like that. And of course, that's, you know, that's what we're interested in. And that's what, so getting a little bit into today's verse, that's what also both, you know, Vyasadeva is interested in, and Narada Muni is interested in, and then that's what this meeting is all about. You know, getting, as I said, right into today's verse and what we're talking about, this part of the Bhagavatam. So what's happening here is, you know, we all know Narada Muni, Vyasadeva was kind of despondent even after he did so much incredible service, you know, compiling the Vedas and the Mahabharata and the Puran, and so many different Vedic literatures. He compiled them, he did it. And but he still was feeling a little despondent. You know, we all know the story. Vyasadeva came along. He kind of figured Narada Muni came along. So he already figured it out. Vyasadeva kind of already figured it out for himself. I think probably because I haven't really directly glorified the Supreme Lord Krishna. That's why I'm feeling so. And then Narada Muni came along and he confirmed that. And in the process of doing that, he gave him some wonderful instructions, amazing instructions. He gave him a class, basically. You know, Narada gave Vyasadeva a class. And after hearing that class, Vyasadeva was like, whoa, holy smoke. You know, I mean, he was like really impressed. He was like, wow. And that's why, and this just brings us up to what we're hearing today. He's so impressed that, just like after somebody gives a really great class, Shyama Kund gave a really great class a couple of days ago. And after this, I was, you know, he gives a bunch of great classes. And after this, I was thinking, wow, who is this person? You know, what's his background? I mean, how did he get so smart? How did he learn so much about Krishna consciousness? So, you know, it's kind of, that's the way he's feeling here. Vyasadeva is feeling like that. Who is this person who could speak like that and explain this philosophy like that? So he's asking him about his past and everything like that. And of course, you know, Narada Muni's explaining. But it's all part of the same thing that, you know, thereafter, Vyasadeva's mission was to try to, you know, present literatures that would help people elevate themselves spiritually. Narada Muni is also, you know, he's part of that same program. He's part of that same thing. So they're all interested in that same thing. So, interestingly enough, the word Narada means, Nara means man, and Da means one who can deliver. See, so unlike the people, the unfortunate people here in L.A. and all over the world who are flocking to LAX for that experience, Vyasadeva knew the right place to look for that experience. He's looking to the Nichisita, eternally liberated spiritual master, Narada Muni, and who in fact is the right person. Nara, as I said, means person, man, or human, and Da means one who can deliver. And it's explained that Narada Muni can deliver bhakti, he can deliver pure love of Godhead to anybody. But in the third canto, chapter 12, I forget which number, verse, but in the purport, Prabhupada explains, but the way that's understood is that he doesn't deliver Krishna like a commodity, like, okay, here's Krishna, you know. No, he delivers the process, he delivers the knowledge, and then the person has to, you know, put that knowledge into practice and apply it in their life, and then they'll get the result. So Vyasadeva, you know, he knew the right place to look. He looked the right place. These people should stop spending so much time at LAX and come here to LA ISKCON. And then they'll have a better chance of, you know, having that experience that they're after. And so in the same way, we should be like that too. You know, we should follow in the footsteps of Vyasadeva and make sure we're looking in the right place for that experience and take full advantage of it. I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch TV like every other kid, and there was this expression, probably you see it in the Westerns, you know, like one cowboy would say to the other, he'd say, okay, so-and-so, let's get while the getting's good. Heard that expression? Let's get while the getting's good. It means let's get out of here while we still can before the Indians come back and they scalp us or something like that. Let's get while the getting's good. So we should have that mood. We should be thinking like, let me get while the getting's good. Let me get out of here. Here I am now. I've got a spiritual master. You know, I've got a movement. I've got good association. I've got the knowledge. I've got everything. Let me take full advantages. I don't want to mess around. I don't want to stay here in this. We shouldn't want to stay here in this material world 1 second more than we absolutely have to. It's a very precarious place. You know, even on the high levels, even on the high levels in the material world, there's a lot of mess-ups. You know, things don't go so smoothly. I'll give you an example, and it's related to these verses. When Shama Kun gave class the other day, at the end of the class I asked, okay, so, you know, it's we're hearing how Narada Muni was in his previous life, from Narada Muni, in his previous life, he was the son of the maidservant. And then before that, he was Upabharana, the Gandharva, in one of the heavenly planets. Who was he before that? And Shama Kun said, well, actually, I don't know. It's not mentioned in the books. We don't really know. He was kind of bewildered, and I was too. That was a legit question. I really didn't know either. And but we got the answer. We got the answer, actually. And I'll lead into it, introduce it hopefully in an interesting way. Back in like 1966 or 7, Prabhupada was giving a class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So he said, at one point he read something and the name Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya came up. So Prabhupada said, so who is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? And there was kind of like a silence, you know. And then one female voice spoke up and said, girl, he said, she said, oh, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was like a leading scholar of the time. He was of the impersonal persuasion, and Lord Chaitanya preached to him and converted him. Something. She gave a good answer, in other words, and she knew. And Papa, he chuckled, and he said, aha, girls are smart. Girls are smart, see? So on that note, yeah, girls are smart. Mother Kriya Shakti actually answered both those questions. She came to us after class, and the answer to the question of Narada Muni before he was Upabharana is Narada Muni. Narada Muni, before Upabharana, he was Narada Muni, because Narada Muni goes right back to the beginning. Narada Muni is one of the 10 mentally generated sons of Lord Brahma. So he's right. So before Upabharana, which was maybe just, I think it says, in the previous day of Lord Brahma, which is just like some billions of years ago, but way, way before that, he's Narada Muni. You know, Brahma's lifetime is 311 trillion years. He's about halfway through it. So, you know, and that pastime of creation, that takes place in the beginning of Lord Brahma's lifetime. It doesn't take place at the beginning of each day of Lord Brahma. That's my understanding. And So he goes right back to there. And so where's I going with this now? Oh, yeah. So it's interesting to kind of you know, I was when I understood that. Oh yeah, and I was trying to think of, okay, so that was one question: who is Lord Brahma? But you know, who is Narada Muni before he was Upabharana? The answer that was Narada Muni. Then the other question I asked, the second question, I said, okay, well, how did Narada Muni become Upabharana? You know, and we didn't know the answer to that either. But Mother Kriya Shakti knew the answer to that one too. She said, what happened was, back in the beginning there, Lord Brahma, at one point, he requested Narada Muni to become a grihastha and produce children, because that was his program. See, that's Lord Brahma's service. Lord Brahma, he's like the superintendent of the jail. So he's given the job that he has to create the material world. It's a reform school. So he has to create the reform school, and then he has to bring the prisoners into it. See, so in order for the prisoners to come in, the spirit souls, or the, you know, the rebellious spirit souls of the spiritual world, the spiritual criminals, they have to have bodies to go into. See, so that was his, you know, that was his, that's his service. So it's in the beginning, in the third canto, it's nicely described. The first thing Lord Brahma does is he creates the five nescient engagements. And of those, the most important one is misidentification of the body as the self. See? And then going on from there, the fear of death, obviously, is a, you know, result of that. And another thing, false sense of possession, anger resulting from frustration, and can't remember the other one. Amala Bhakti Maharaj, I know I've heard you mention these in class, no? Five nation engagement. So anyway, there's another one. So, and then, but he felt bad after that, because, you know, he could understand that this is going to, like, you know, make this is going to give living entities a hard time, having to deal with these things. So he felt bad. So then he created the process of self-realization. And that was Shankhya, Yoga, Vairagya, and Tapasya. He created those engagements, so those understandings, which would be those, and those who embraced those and took shelter of those would be able to become free from those five nescient engagements. Okay, so now he did that, okay, and he's feeling, okay, now we're ready to start populating this universe. And those, he got the prison system all set up, right, and now he's ready to, okay, bring in the prisoners. So he's got to get bodies, you know, prison suits for the prisoners. They have to have suits to wear. So he produces the four Kumaras, like, you know, I can't remember if it specified the exact it wasn't sexual reproduction, the exact process by which the four Kumaras came into being. But he produced them, and he asked them to, you know, okay, now generate, produce, you know, generate population. And they wouldn't do it. They said, you know, they said, sorry, Dad, we're not, no way. We take after you, we're smart. We're not going to get entangled like that. And Lord Brahma became angry. But at the same time, because he's very intelligent, he suppressed his anger. I don't know if he made faces like that. Maybe it's more like Hiranyakasipu. But anyway, he was angry. And it's described that from his being angry, Rudra came from between his eyebrows. And Rudra was like, he was kind of bluish and reddish, because he's a mixture of passion and anger, passion and ignorance. And he was... And he told him, okay, Rudra, you know, your brothers here wouldn't cooperate and obey me, so I want you to populate the universe. And, you know, he gave him off a female, so he gave him the ability to do that. And Rudra, I think it was by expanding, he expanded into many, many Rudras, and they were obedient. You know, they weren't rebellious souls like that, but they were ferocious by nature. And it's described that they were just kind of like tearing up the universe. Really just destroying the whole place. Lord Brahma just did all this work to set things up, and now these Rudras were kind of like going wild and, you know, tearing everything to pieces. So he said, okay, wait, let's have a huddle here. You know, he spoke to the head Rudra, and he said, okay, no, chill out. I need you to just chill out here. And he told him to go meditate until the time of annihilation, when his services would be required. And he was obedient. He did that. And by the way, you know, Prabhupada mentions it in two different purports twice, that the four Kumaras, even though they disobeyed their father, Lord Brahma, who was their father, and they're kind of like the spiritual master in another sense, they were right. He didn't say they were wrong. He said they were, how do you put it? Yeah, the Kumaris were right. Anyway, basically, Prabhupada said that, so that just sort of throw that in there. So anyway, so then here's Lord Brahma again. He's still thinking, well, now what to do, you know? So he produced these ten sages, and Narada was one of them. Narada was born from the deliberation of Lord Brahma. But those sages were very much in the mode of goodness, so they also not very much was happening, you know? Not the population. It wasn't happening as a result of even producing those 10 sages. And Narada, of course, totally opted out. And the others were married, but nothing was, you know, things weren't progressing. So then Lord Brahma was trying to figure, well, how do I get this, you know, all universe populated? So at one point he produced a daughter named Vak, who he became attracted to himself. Maybe he was trying to figure it out, you know, turn up the sex desire or something like that. But this is my speculation at this point, but he became attracted to Vak himself. So maybe, you know, but it's stated in the purports where that's described that he's not to be condemned for that. And the way but it doesn't give a lot of detail. It doesn't explain it, you know. But I'm thinking, like, it's like a scientist who got caught out by his own experiment. Like, Lord Brahma's trying to figure out how to populate the universe, and he turned up the attraction for the opposite sex, and so much so that he got attracted. Anyway, that, I don't know, that doesn't say that that's the explanation, but he got attracted himself, but so he had to, once again, he got back off, and then finally he was sincere, you know, he was really trying to figure out, how do I populate this universe? And then from his body, it's described, from his body came two forms, one with a mustache, you know, human-like forms, one with a mustache and one with swollen breasts. And that was Manu and Satarupa. And they're not referred to as his offspring. They're referred to as Kayam, K-A-Y-A-M. Kayam means his own body, his own body. And they engaged in sexual reproduction. And from their offspring, that's how the universe got populated. And so anyway, the point being that even these are the highest levels of, you know, society in the universe, and we can see even at that highest level, things are not going like completely smoothly. There's kind of, so what to speak of at the level where of material existence that we're experiencing is practically just this much more than total insanity. We're just like a thin veneer above total insanity, the way things go on in the world that we're living in today in Kali Yuga here in, you know, 2018 here in this, you know, planet Earth. It's pretty close to insanity, but just keeps about that much more. So we want to get out of here as fast as possible. You know, it's not a place to mess around. Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada, spiritual master, said, he said, you know, he's like, this material world is like an outhouse, like a latrine. So do your business and get out. Don't linger. So we should, take that seriously. What time is it? 8:15. Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Shamakun. Fifth of those Neshan engagements while we're waiting is self-deception. So. Sorry.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, thank you so much for a wonderful class, very detailed. I just got a doubt, like I got a question that this process of creation that Lord Brahma started creating, and he produced so many sons, like the Kumaras, then Rudra, and then Swayambhu Manu, and then this all happened in this day of Brahma, right? So,
what happened in this day of Brahma?
This all process that you described just now, that he created Kumaras, And then Rudra came out, and then Swayambhu Manu and Narada. So you were explaining that this happened in this day of Brahma, and the story of Narad Muni being the Narad boy, the son of maidservant.
Well, are you sure that all happened this day of Brahma?
Yeah, it is, because Swayambhu Manu was in this.
I didn't have a chance to ask anybody before the class, but that's I was kind of thinking about that myself, because I wasn't sure if it happens every day of Brahma, that, you know, Lord Brahma creates the four Kumaras and then Rudra and then blah 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 blah, blah, etc., or if it just happens at the beginning of Lord Brahma's lifetime. Because one doubt I have about that it happened at this day of Lord Brahma, and it happens every day of Lord Brahma, is that it's stated in the fifth canto that Maharaj Priyavrata, after 11 Arbuda of years, which is like, I think, 11 billion years, he became a little, thought he was getting a little attached to his wife, and he thought he had to, you know, become renounced, something like that. So that's 11 billion years. That's longer than a day of Lord Brahma, and he didn't come into the picture. He's of course, one of the offspring of Manu and Satarupa, but knows if he's. And that's not referring to his whole life. That's just referring to some part of his marriage. So it sounds like the times don't work for that. You know what I mean?
In one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus.
Okay.
And in the creation process, it describes the name of the Manu as Swayambhu, right? So
yeah,
that means
right.
It happened.
He's
in
the first.
This day of. That means it happened in this day of Brahma. Hmm. And my question is then, in that case, that. How come the Upabharana's previous life was Narad? Like, how that is connected? Because Upabharan and Narad boy being the son of maidservant, that happened in the previous day of Brahma. So, how is that connected? Like, if Narad Muni was born in this day of Brahma and Upabharan and Narad boy was in the previous day, then how come the previous life of Upabharan be Narad Muni?
A good point. Good question. And since that we kind of discarded my idea that it only, that whole process creation only happens at the beginning of Brahma's lifetime, then I'll take a stab at it, but Archita had his hand. It's a pastime. You know, it's a pastime, and it happens like that. And, you know, that Narada Muni is part of that. He's an eternally liberated soul, and that part of the pastime is that in some particular day of Brahma, he was cursed by Lord Brahma because he didn't follow his instruction to get married and have children. Then he got cursed to become Upavarna, and then in the next birth to become the son of the maidservant. But I'm not satisfied with my own answer. Go ahead, Archita. Okay.
Yeah, as you said, it's a pastime. Certain players in the pastime are permanent players. Just like Krishna appears in every day of Brahma. Does it mean that Krishna is just appearing now? No, Krishna is always existing. He appears in every day of Brahma. And certain players in the pastime also are eternal players, like Lord Shiva. He appears in this material world, but he's eternally existing. Narada Muni is eternally existing. He appears in different aspects. Arjuna travels the same. Arjuna, Prabhupada answered that question. One devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that when you say that when Krishna's pastime starts here, then immediately starts in another place, and it just keeps starting. So is it the same Arjuna that travels? And Prabhupada wrote back, yes. He says it's the same Arjuna that travels with Krishna in every instance of that pastime. But it doesn't mean that everybody who's in the pastime is also like that. Some are conditioned souls that are drawn into the pastime.
Stop there. Thank you much. Granto Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
The names are not Kumaras.
because that didn't start happening until...
You know, one thing on that was that, you know, in the Bhagavatam, these things are not in chronological order. So it could have been from another kalpa. It could have, you know, you never know where all this particular thing happened.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, and the other thing is what he said is right. It's a Krishna. These characters are with Krishna all the time. And when one ends somewhere else, he just begins somewhere else in the same pastime. In other words, that pastime doesn't ever stop. It just goes on eternally. That's very difficult for us to understand. But also in the Bhagavatam, it doesn't describe all these things in a chronological order, like you're reading a book. Right. You know, you go on page 6 to 7, 8, 9, 10. It doesn't happen that way. It could be over here, down here, over there, like this and like that. It just compiles all the pastimes of the Lord, the Bhagavatam.
Well, I'm going to have to think about this. I hear what you're saying, but I haven't got a clear thing, so I'll get back to you. Saying he's still alive?
Well, of course. I apologize.
No, there are certain persons that are like this.